The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let me tell you about Underdog Fantasy. Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest way to play fantasy football and basketball this season. Just draft. No need to worry about waivers, lineups, or injuries. Underdog Fantasy handles it all for you. Just go to UnderdogFantasy.com or download the app, draft a season-long best ball team, or any of the individual games that you can find, and that's it. No in-season management. You can even bring your own home league over to UnderdogFantasy.com. Use the promo code 5RSN and you get a 100% deposit match up to $100. That's right. Use the promo code 5RSN and use a 100% deposit match up to $100. UnderdogFantasy.com. Sports betting season is in full force. You need a sportsbook with integrity and longevity like BetUS. You may already know this, but BetUS has been pioneers in the sportsbook industry for almost 3 decades, thriving and paying their loyal customer base. That is BetUS.com. They have loads of bonuses. Join now or call 800-69-BETUS. That is 800-MY-BETUS. And you will receive a 125% sign-up bonus by using the bonus code 5. That's the word 5, F-I-V-E. They also have re-up and referral bonuses as well. Follow my lead and open an account with BetUS. You bet, you win, you get paid. BetUS. This show is brought to you by Lewis Peters State Farm, agency representing the number one auto and home insurer in the United States for more than 60 years combined experience in the insurance industry. Local agents that understand South Florida's unique market, you have access to them 24/7, walk-in, call-in, click-in through lewispeters.com. You can find them online on social media at SF Agent Peters, or you can call at 305-275-5585. Remember, lewispeters.com.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. Simon Clancy is here. Chris Coffin will be here for the second part of the show. As always, we are brought to you by Manscaped. Use promo code 5RSN for 20% off your entire order. Hello, Simon.
Hello, Alf.
They're facing Joe Flacco this week. Does that make you excited, or I don't know?
It's the worst of the three that you'd want to choose, actually. Quite frankly, because, you know, Flacco's the most experienced. He's probably the least. No, that's not true. Actually, I was going to say the least talented. That's not true. He, you know, this is the guy that is experienced, has beaten the Dolphins before, knows what it takes to win, has won a Super Bowl, you know, is a gamer, understands the playbook, understands how to move an offense, all those sorts of things. You know, the Mike White era is over, I think. And Zach Wilson, not 100%, obviously. So, you know, I suspect Wilson will be the backup. But, you know, Flacco is he brings an interesting challenge because, you know, he's a quick decision maker. So you wonder about whether or not they'll work on that cover zero and how they'll try and, you know, you try and make it out like he's playing Joe Montana, but you try and counter what Joe Flacco can bring to the table.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the key is, you know, ball control against a defense that is, you know, historically bad, actually, when you consider that, I mean, I think they've allowed 175 points in their last 4 games, which is the second most since the merger back in 1970. I think they're the first team to allow 45 points three times in a game since 1966. And their crosstown rivals, the Giants, and they've surrendered 1,890 total yards in the last four games. That is the worst four-game period in NFL history. So, yeah, you want to, you know, make those drives that you have on offense count, and, you know, knowing that on offense they do, you know, they do have some decent players. You know, Jameson Crowder can get open. Keenan Cole's been decent. Corey Davis is coming back. Elijah Moore's played pretty well. So, you know, skill position players, they can, you know, they can hurt you, but come on, you know, we should be beating these, you know, they're without what, Denzel Mims and Marcus May and Carl Lawson and, you know, Bryce Huff and Vinnie Curry and Cam Clark and Mekhi Becton. And, you know, we should be turning this lot over, and, you know, this should be Miami back to 4-7, hopefully.
Yeah. And here's the thing, and I don't think we're going to spend too much time on the Jets, although, you know, I've seen them play a lot. They throw their backs, and their backs are pretty good out of the backfield, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you look at Carter, like, he's been good. And I didn't like him coming out. I liked his backfield mate, Javonte Williams, better. And I don't know if you watched him play at Denver. As advertised, he's pretty good. I think he's underutilized, although they keep giving the ball to Melvin Gordon. I don't know if you've seen too much of him.
I like Carter. Actually, I like Javonte Williams is playing well in Denver as well and getting the ball more and more each week. Carter's done a decent job. He's playing behind a terrible offensive line. Let's not forget. You know, they don't have Becton. Like I said, you know, they're starting George Fant and Morgan Moses. Elijah Vera Tucker's played all right as the, you know, as a rookie, but, you know, they're really struggling up front, really struggling to get any movement to help out either Carter or Tevin Coleman or even LaMichael Pirine, who obviously we know a little bit from Florida and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I don't fear their running game at all, but then they wouldn't fear our running game. But, you know, I think with us getting the ball, I think the Dolphins will try and establish some run. This is the week to do it, certainly, you know, with that with that leaky front seven that they have. But also, you know, like we talked about, Marcus May, they're essentially their defensive leader. I know CJ Mosley is co-defensive captain, but, you know, without Marcus May in the secondary, you know, you're matching up with guys like, you know, Jason Pinnock and Bryce Hall, who's never quite got back after the injury at Virginia, and Javelin Guidry has kicked around the league a little bit, and Brandon Echols, and, you know, this is not a good group, and we need to be taking advantage of that, even with our depleted wide receiver core. You know, you feel like this could be a big breakout. Not that he needs a breakout because he's played really well, but this could be a breakout day for Jalen Waddle. But he's going to need some support from, you know, whether that's Preston Williams. Oh, who am I kidding? He's going to be injured.
I like that you mentioned the running game. I don't remember a Dolphin team, because even last year they didn't have a great running game, but every once in a while they showed up to have a big game, like against San Diego, the 250 yards against New England. This running game is, I don't remember one worse. Do you? Because I don't.
It's been a struggle. It's been a struggle. But this is, you know, this is part of the problem. You know, you look at I've seen enough of Indianapolis this season to know what a massive whiff we took on Jonathan Taylor.
Yes.
You know, who's now a top three or four running back in the NFL. You know, would he have had the same results behind our line that he has behind, you know, Quentin Nelson and you know, the former Notre Dame center, whose name completely escapes me, but no, of course he wouldn't, you know, but he's still Jonathan Taylor, you know.
Yeah.
You know, in the league at those players that we could have had. Najee Harris had a decent day against the Lions and has had a good season on course for 1,200 yards rushing, and he's such a red zone threat out of the backfield. So, you know, it's we're essentially being powered by, you know, and give Ahmed and especially Myles Gaskin credit. I know Chris hates Myles Gaskin, but, you know, they're doing the best that they can with their maxed out skill set on an offense that is really struggling behind a historically bad offensive line. You know, essentially these are third down change of pace backs who are being asked to carry a load, which they're just not built for physically or, you know, skill set wise, they're just not. But, you know, they can catch the ball out of the backfield, they can make plays, they can pick up chunk yardage. But you just like to see, you know, one of those guys behind next year, whether that's a Isaiah Spiller or a Breece Hall or a, you know, Kenneth Walker or a Brian Robinson or, you know, one of those, you know, big running backs that hopefully the team will finally get around to to actually decide they're going to, you know, use a draft pick on one of these guys as Amir White or a, you know, Zach Charbonnet, somebody like this who can actually charge the running game a little bit rather than, you know, continue just to, you know, pick off 180, 190 pound guys and expect them to carry the ball as much as possible. And it's just not in their wheelhouse.
Yeah. And I think it has a lot to do with the playbook as well. They're not a zone running team. And I understand Savon Ahmed is their fastest running back. So why isn't he taking all the outside zone runs? They're giving them to Myles Gaskin. I don't understand that. Savon Ahmed gets a lot of the inside zone runs. I think they implement their backs wrong. And I think that their game plan, their playbook, as far as the running game, it's not what they have on the offensive line. They have guys they could run a lot of leads with and gain 3-4 yards and call it a running game. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but sure. they just won't do it. And they did it last year. Like I said, they weren't great last year. But every once in a while, against Los Angeles, against the Patriots, you showed up with a running game and you actually beat teams with your running game. But yeah, that's something for the offseason. Absolutely. Now let me ask you this: expectations are back, because if you look at the schedule going forward, the next four games, they're favored in three of the four, and they're pick 'em in the other one against Carolina. Now, I'm no math major, but if they win four games that they're favored in, that puts them at 7-7 and in the thick of the playoff chase. Should this team not be afraid of expectations? Is it too much to pile on, or it's time to put some more expectations back onto this team?
I mean, the expectation is to beat three out of, or essentially four, but realistically three really shitty New York teams, you know, the Jets twice and the Giants. That's not really expectation. You know, expectation should be to march into Lambeau and beat the Packers, or to, you know, into New England and stomp the Patriots again, or to march into Tampa and turn over the Buccaneers. That's expectation. Mm-hmm. You know, your expectation shouldn't be to beat arguably the worst team in football, the New York Jets, you know, at home and away. That's not an expectation. Look, these are big boys. You know, a lot of these kids have played national championship games, big games, been high school studs, college studs. You know, even, you know, you look at Austin Jackson, you know, played at USC, you look at Javon Holland, Jalen Waddle at Oregon and Alabama, you look at, you know, Mike Gesicki played at Penn State. These, you know, these guys have played in big games. There are expectations that come with that. This is the NFL. They're paid a lot of money. Go out and do your job. I mean, there's no more, no less, really.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with you, because I think at the end of these four games, if they do manage to pull it off, I think we're just going to look back at it and say, man, what a disappointing season it was. They did nothing extraordinary, and they actually blew the season in the first 2 months, because they could have had a really good win total going into the final three games of the season. So, yeah, I tend to agree with you. I don't know if there's a way to salvage it unless, you know, something – out of the ordinary happens in these last eight games.
If they lose to the Jets, then in either of these two games, then we may as well just pack it in for this season. I mean, this is, you know, we are now entering absolute must-win territory. They must win on Sunday. There are no excuses, because I think if, you know, the Panthers, it will be a difficult game. The return of Cam, you know, he brings a whole different kettle of fish to the equation. That's a terrible conflation PJ Walker, you'd kind of like to face. You'd obviously like to face Sam Darnold. Cam is going to be rusty, but he brings some juice. McCaffrey back, obviously. Their offense is decent. You know, they've got some decent playmakers on the perimeter with DJ Moore and with Terrace Marshall, and, you know, some good players on defense. You know, Brian Burns can get after it. Yeah, I mean, Brian Burns and Hassan Reddick could give us some serious fits on the off the edge. You know, really good. Shaq Thompson's a really good player. Good players in the secondary. Jeremy Chin's a good player. The corner from LSU is a really good player. So, you know, it's that's a tough game. That is a tough game. It's a tough game. They need to be winning. They need to go, you know, they need to get into a position where they're heading to New Orleans on Monday Night Football, where they're 7-7, you know, with a 5-6 game winning streak, and thinking, you know what, this could just maybe turn into something, you know, because if they go on a Monday Night Football and they beat the New Orleans Saints in their own, that's expectation, that right there, you know, and then you take a 7-game winning streak to Tennessee the following week in a rematch against Ryan Tannehill and arguably the hottest team in the AFC at the moment. Obviously, a lot can change. That's expectation. And then you finish with hosting the New England Patriots and, you know, talked about it in the Only Fins chat yesterday. You know, talked about the Patriots at the start of the season. This is a dangerous football team now. You know, this is what they do. They kind of write off September and early October to get themselves right, to understand all the things they need to understand. And you've seen them over the last couple of weeks taking good teams apart, you know, and that's what they do. Good quarterback play, good offensive line, strong running game, really good defense. Matthew Judon with 11 sacks is absolutely flying off the edge. Secondary looks great. Great coaching, solid special teams. You know, I've seen this film before and I don't like it, you know. So that's expectation for the Dolphins. Anything less than 7-7 and, you know, this season is a washout. They can turn it around. They can absolutely turn it around, but they need to do it and they need their core players, their good core young players especially, to step up now and really make a stand.
Yeah, and the Patriots have a really important stretch here. They do play the Falcons on Thursday. That's, you know, that's not saying much, but that's almost a must win for them because then they run off. Check out this 4-game stretch, Simon, and tell me what you think of this 4-game stretch. Titans, Bills, Colts, Bills.
Yeah, I'm glad they play the Bills twice in that short period of time, but yeah, it will be. Don't forget though, there's three. So what are those four teams? Titans. So there's three out of those four quarterbacks that Bill Belichick has always had the kind of Indian sign over. Josh Allen twice and Ryan Tannehill once, you know. So
yes, and the other one is Carson Wentz,
Carson Wentz, obviously, but didn't play in that Super Bowl. But obviously it's it will be interesting to see. These are good, you know, I think against the Tennessee team with Derrick Henry, then you know, I'd see New England struggling. But you wonder with
Derrick Henry is out.
Absolutely. But I think if he was playing, I think if Julio Jones was playing, he's now on IR, you know, that's going to be a very interesting game. And you just think if the Patriots beat the Titans, you know, after all the Titans have done, that big win at the weekend against New Orleans, you're suddenly starting to think, geez, you know, if they beat the Bills twice, all bets are off, you know? So,
yeah,
we shall see.
Yeah, what I like about them is that they're gaining an identity. Like, you know what they do well. They don't try to do anything more than what they are. No, you know, they'll run the ball. They'll use play action. Their quarterback's going to be efficient, and then their defense is going to be really, really good. And they rush the passer well. So, that's going to be an interesting 4-game set for them and kind of sets up that last meeting because, you know, the whole AFC is clustering and helping the Dolphins out, essentially, because there's no standout. So they're 2 games back with 8 to go. It's time to start winning some of these games. And this is one where, yeah, you talked about expectations. I guess the expectations have to be that they got to smash this Jets team on Sunday. I don't know if you agree with me or not, just take any win.
I mean, I'll take any win, frankly. I mean, you'd like to see them. You can't come off a Baltimore win and, you know, a semi-dominant performance in which they put down and then either lay an egg and lose or win by a point with a last second field. I mean, yeah, that's great. You take the win. But now's the time you've got to start showing. You know, go back to that game against Jacksonville. You know, the Dolphins should have been 21-0 up after the first 3 or 4 drives. They can't keep missing opportunities. They can't keep shooting themselves in the foot with bad play or penalties or, you know, missed opportunities, which is what happened. Which is why they let the Jaguars hang around and hang around and hang around, and eventually the Jaguars ended up killing them. And that's what happens. And that's what the Jets beat the Titans. You know, lest we not forget, the Jets did beat the Titans. You know, and that was a Titans team with Derrick Henry. So,
and they beat the Bengals. They beat the Bengals too.
So, you know, they're no mugs, this team, but you know, we need to mug them off, and that's the difference. We need to, you know, the team that beat the Baltimore Ravens needs to arrive in, you know, the Meadowlands and stomp on their face.
Yeah, and before we go to commercial break, I got to ask you a question because OJ McDuffie got into it with, I'm not even going to acknowledge who this person was, but the guy was trying to tell OJ McDuffie he wasn't a top 5 wide receiver in Dolphin history. So I came out with my own list, and there's like on Twitter, there's like a jihad just because I put Devontae Parker 7th on the list. Uh-huh. I don't know what you think of my list of the greatest Dolphin wide receivers. I got my list as this: Paul Warfield, Mark Clayton, Mark Duper, Nat Moore, OJ McDuffie, Chris Chambers, Devontae Parker, Irving Fryer, Jarvis Landry, Aronde Gadsden. Any issues with that list?
I mean, that's put me on the spot a little bit. I would probably go Warfield, Duper Clayton, Pickham, Moore, Chambers in the mix, OJ, obviously, Jarve. I mean, you go back and look at fucking Landry's numbers are ridiculous at the time that he played with the Dolphins.
Yes, they are.
Who else? Oh, yeah, Irving Fryer, he said, yeah.
Yeah. Aronde Gadsden.
Gadsden. Where'd you put Howard Twilley?
Outside of the top 10.
Yeah,
cause,
maybe.
Because then you get into Duriel Harris, you know. There's a few guys you could put in there. Tony Martin.
Yeah, Tony Martin. Yeah. Tony Martin was pretty decent. I suppose you have to look at Parker a little bit through the lens of the modern game.
Yes.
I mean, the game has changed so much from, you know, the time of, despite the numbers they put up, Duper Clayton and Moore, the time the game really, you know, Duper Clayton and Moore will be catching 100 balls a season for 2,000 yards if it was, you know, 1985 all over again. Who's the most talented receiver you've ever had?
The most talented?
Yeah.
Mark Clayton. And I don't think it's particularly close.
I'd say Clayton or Fryer.
That's a really good one, too. Irving Fryer was extremely talented and one of the greatest off seasons in Dolphin history. If you remember, we're talking about 1993, and the Dolphins are coming off a pretty long, prolonged run where they played in AFC championship games. They played in a Super Bowl, and they got to redo the entire wide receiver core, and they shipped out Mark Clayton and Mark Duper, and in came Mark Ingram and Irving Fryer, and they didn't lose a beat. They actually improved. So, Irving Fryer, absolutely. Yeah.
Who is the so 306 players in Dolphins history have caught passes. Okay. If Mark Duper is number one with 8,869 yards, who is number 306?
Okay, that's a good Preston Williams.
No.
Wow. Who is number? Okay. Wow. I get a feeling it's on this team. Is it Isaiah Ford?
No. How could it be Isaiah Ford when he had a 62-yard, 52-yard?
Yeah, that's true. Wow. Who is it? Who is that?
Who is the 306th and final player on the list of yardage of passes caught as a Miami Dolphin?
Wow. No idea.
He has one catch for minus 6 yards. One target, one reception, minus 6 yards.
Who is that?
Ready?
Yes.
Daniel Constantine Marino.
So he threw a pass. I got batted back into the air. He caught it.
I don't know how it played out. Do you know who's at number 305?
Who?
One place above him. Somebody that was on the team last year. He's now ripping up trees for the Eagles again.
Not Jordan Howard.
Jordan Howard. One catch, one target, minus 3 yards.
By the way, there's something going on. Or he completely dogged it last year. Have you been watching Jordan Howard?
Scheme.
It has to be. He looks competent again. He looks fine. He's getting 5 yards a carry.
I always thought he was one of the best inside-outside zone runners in the league, and I just think it was schematic. He also looked fat in Miami.
Yes.
You know, he just looked fat.
Yeah, and now he's killing it with the Eagles. All right, prediction time. Well, what happens this Sunday, Simon? They beat him by a lot, a little.
I'm going Miami 35.
Wow.
Jets 16.
I'm thinking somewhere around there. They got to get into the 30s. The Jets have allowed 45 points in 3 out of the last 4 games. So I'm going to say they do a little less than 35. But 4 touchdowns nonetheless. 31 and, 16. Same score. 31-16. Somewhere around there. All right. After this commercial break, we will have Chris Kaufman.
just a quick note before we finish. Brian Flores is talking right now, and he says that Tua is going to take the throwing reps this week, or most of them. He reiterates there is some discomfort in the finger, but that he is doing better.
Yeah, that's good to hear. All I want to hear is that he's starting and he's going to play. End of story. And Jacoby Brissett's nowhere near there. So, all right. See you after these words.
This show is brought to you by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is a revolutionary new daily fantasy game whereby you pick 2, 3, or 4 players to go over or under their fantasy point projections. And if you're correct, you win. Pick 2 or more players from the same sport or league, or go cross leagues for your parlay. Use the promo code 5, that's F-I-V-E, 5, and receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. But first, sign up at prizepicks.com to start winning today.
And we're back. And as promised, Chris Kaufman is here. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
Dolphins signed Jake Luton. Saw that? And yours truly had the story. I beat everybody to it. I beat Barry Jackson by 30 minutes.
Congratulations.
And of course, I had it first on OnlyFans.
Of course.
It on OnlyFans, and I said, you know what? I'm not gonna let all these other assholes take credit for this shit. I'm going on Twitter and I'm breaking it myself too. So I broke the story on Twitter. It's not much of a story, you know, signing Jake Luton.
No, I guess not. But it's interesting that I saw it. I saw you say it on OnlyFans, and I didn't think it was breaking news. I didn't think it was you breaking news. I thought it was you just like saying what somebody else had said already on Twitter. So
It's verifiable.
Didn't give you the credit that you deserved there.
No. Yeah, you can check my Twitter account. I beat everybody else. All the beat writers. I beat them all.
Mm-hmm.
Beat them all by half an hour. So, yeah, if you saw him play last year, he had a fabulous game against the Houston Texans. Jake Luton, 6'6", 230, good arm, smart kid, 33 in the Wonderlic. His problem was that they started him another game after that Houston Texans game, and he was god-awful the other two times they trotted him out there, including a 4-interception effort against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
You know, it's kind of ridiculous that we don't still have Reed Sinnett right now.
Yeah.
That's kind of ridiculous. Like, why?
That was a mistake.
I don't understand that one, but, you know.
Yeah, and
whatever.
I understand. Okay, you're not going to straight up cut Jacoby Brissett, although I wouldn't mind. You know, first of all, let's establish that. Would you have just cut Jacoby Brissett and promoted Reed Sinnett?
No, but you didn't need to.
Right, you could just promote him, right?
Yeah.
Or protect him. Protect him all year, no?
Protect him. Protect him, or, you know, is the 53rd man on the roster really that valuable? I don't get it. I don't get why he's not still here, but, hey, that was their choice.
They've made some weird choices. Like Jared Doakes. You know Jared Doakes has been on the protect list every single week this season?
Has he?
Yes.
That can't be. They're only allowed to protect the same guy a couple of times, isn't it?
Isn't it? I think you could keep protecting them. At least that's what Barry Jackson told me. I'm just taking what Barry Jackson said as fact.
Well,
he said Jared Doakes is the only guy that's been protected all season.
Huh. So, that's weird, because I didn't think you were allowed to do it like more than like 4 times or something like that.
So what are your thoughts on Jake Luton?
Well, and Simon and I used to talk about him coming out of the draft, and we liked him quite a bit. You know, I think there was a lot to like there. I thought that, you know, I'd watched – he was a guy that I had watched previously, you know, prior to his last year at Oregon State. It was Oregon State, right? I'm not going crazy, am I? I had watched him previously to that last year, and I remember that he didn't look very interesting to me because he just looked like another one of these big guys who don't have a very, you know, fast process. And you see that a lot. And And then I remember I watched him in his final year at Oregon State, and it looked far different. You know, it was pretty surprising to me that he really, you know, had improved that much. So, I mean, I think that he's a tall, big armed guy. He's been through, when he played at Oregon State, I mean, he went through the School of Hard Knocks. I mean, he wasn't well protected there, and things were not easy. And yet because of that, he developed a pretty impressively fast process. That was the thing that I noticed about him. You know, we're talking way back in January of 2020. So it was interesting. He's definitely one of the guys that I was like, I would appreciate him being here. But I would appreciate Reed Sinnett being here more.
Mm-hmm. And Reed Sinnett, as I understand it, he's still with the Eagles and on the practice squad and being protected, right? They protected him.
Wait a minute now. I thought they put him on the roster.
Did they?
I mean, in order to steal him, that's what they had to do, right?
I believe so. You know what? Let me go look at this up.
Looking at it right now, and my man is on the roster.
Oh boy, still. He's gonna take over for Jalen Hurts any moment.
Well, it's Jalen Hurts, Gardner Minshew, and Reed Sinnett.
That's what Gardner Minshew ended up with.
Yeah, that's where Gardner Minshew ended up. They traded for him, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
They traded for Gardner Minshew. But Reed Sinnett's number three on that. And, you know, it's actually kind of interesting, Reed Sinnett. He was with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I've heard him talking about, you know, he was in a room with Tom Brady. I mean, he was at a position same year Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, Bruce Arians is teaching him and stuff like that. He goes to Miami. I mean, he's in the quarterback room. Dan Marino's there, right? You know, yeah. He's in all the quarterback meetings. And so he's learning with Dan Marino and, you know, Tua Tagovailoa, I guess. But now he goes to the Eagles and he's learning with Gardner Minshew. I think it's a little bit different.
Donovan McNabb and Ron Jaworski, they don't show up.
Yeah, but they're not in the room with them.
No, I just made that.
Their names might be on the stadium somewhere.
Yeah.
But like he was actually in quarterback meetings learning from Tom Brady, in quarterback meetings learning from Dan Marino. Now he goes to Philadelphia and he's in quarterback meetings learning from Gardner Minshew. That's the seasoned vet.
Yeah, you know? He's a free agent at the end of the season, so that could be an inspired move.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, Gardner Minshew is only a third year. He's a seasoned vet, but he's older than normal. And he's the dude was soul. Yeah, the dude was supposed to be a coach at Alabama before he decided to give playing one last shot at Washington State. And he went to Washington State and lit the world on fire and ended up drafted and then, you know, given a real shot in Jacksonville. And so, you know the story, but he was supposed to be a coach at Alabama under Nick Saban. He's to say, well, you know, I'll play it one last time. It's like something out of an old HBO show or something like that.
Yeah. Now I like to do this exercise with people. It's called Do You Know Who Gardner Minshew Is? And I'm going to ask you, Chris, do you know who Gardner Minshew is?
I think I know who Gardner Minshew is.
Okay.
Why wouldn't I?
Okay, what's your assessment of Gardner Minshew as an NFL quarterback? And trust me, listener, we will get into the Jets, although why would we? You know, but
why would we? This is
but
way
let
more
me
fun.
Ask you, I'm asking you point blank. Don't start digging. Okay.
No, I'm not. I'm not digging.
That comes later. Okay. What is your assessment of Gardner Minshew as an NFL quarterback?
The guy, well, like, are we talking like qualitatively, like how good is he, or are we talking about
how good
what
he
is?
Is he a bad quarterback, middle of the pack? good.
Oh no, the dude is a backup at best, but he, you know, he's got some moxie. You know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of a weaker armed version of Matt Moore. That's okay. I believe I compared him to Matt Moore even coming out of the draft. But yeah, like he reminds me of a weaker arm. I mean, he's there's no doubt he's got a pop gun arm. And you know he always has, but he's always had some moxie about him. He struck me as so weird when he was at Eastern Carolina or East Carolina. Like I used to watch him, and it was just like there's something really off-putting about him, about the way that he played football. And it was almost just like, you know, like this thing that you love to hate, but also like you love to watch. It's kind of weird. But then he grew up, he got a lot better at Washington State. He's never been particularly mobile, but he does have moxie. You know, he's got what he lacks in wheels, he makes up for sometimes in balls. But he doesn't have an arm whatsoever. And like I said, he was supposed to be a coach. So the guy is respected for his intelligence. So I guess in that way, you can almost even put him in camp with a Ryan Fitzpatrick, except, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, I believe it or not, has always been physically more, has been physically more talented, I think, than Gardner Minshew has ever been.
Okay. Now here's my favorite part of this little exercise that I do with people. Go look up his numbers. Go look up his numbers the last two seasons before he went 2-for-2 with the Eagles this season. You might be in for a surprise.
Why do you think they're particularly? I mean, they had good. A good year, right?
They're good.
Well, his passer rating is pretty good. It's decent.
I think 37 touchdowns to 11 interceptions is pretty good, isn't it?
I mean, that's pretty good career.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. And 5,541 yards on 799 attempts, which breaks down somewhere around 4,100 per 550, which is not terrible.
Yeah, but we're talking about under 7 yards per attempt. I mean, the dude was just throwing short passes. He actually had some decent weapons in Jacksonville too. Some underrated weapons, I thought, because I always had respect for Keelan Cole, and what he could do. Obviously, he had Laviska Shenault last year and DJ Chark as well, and then James Robinson who was criminally underrated a year ago, which is why I drafted him fantasy this year. But you know, he's not underrated anymore. People are recognizing what a great talent he was. But I mean, just think about last year. I mean, Keelan Cole's a talented player, a good slot player with lots of quickness and savvy. He had Laviska Shenault, Keelan Cole, DJ Chark, and James Robinson, and Chris Conley, and Tyler Eifert that he was throwing to last year. So it's like that's kind of an underrated cast, you know, for the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are not regarded well, who are 1-15. But you know, I think that the bottom line with Gardner is that he was in Jacksonville, is he was kind of the poster boy for garbage yards and garbage time efficiency during not winning performances, you know. Sometimes I think Tua gets accused of that here, except then they forget that Tua actually keeps bringing them back and making them competitive in the fourth quarter, which is the very not definition of garbage time. So I think that he benefited quite a bit. Gardner Minshew did. I don't think he's regarded as a starter in this league, even though not even a Brad Johnson type of starter, I don't think.
Damn good backup, right?
Yeah, well, you know, backups are backups. The backups are never backups because they're pretty damn good. That's the way it is. That's the fallacy of great backup in the NFL, or of the really good backup in the NFL, is just, you know, none of them, if they were good, they wouldn't be backups. Like if they're going to go out in the field and put together a performance that you'd really be interested in, they wouldn't be backups.
Yeah, and there is something to say about the Jaguars after he went 6-6 as a starter as a rookie, and had a decent year. 21 touchdowns and 6 picks is pretty decent for a rookie. They looked around, and the following year he goes 1-7, and they're like, "Yeah, let's just get this guy the hell out of here and take Trevor Lawrence." So that's like in between the lines and in between those stats, there's something that they saw. They said, "Nah, it's not going to happen." So, which leads me to my question, Jake Luton, something or nothing there going forward? Do we have a
chances
possible?
Chances are nothing.
Okay.
Chances are nothing. Like I said before, though, I did appreciate, what his process was coming out. Mm-hmm. But the odds are against him. I will say this, and this is unrelated, but why is Todd Gurley tweeting about the Dolphins as of 2 hours ago?
Because a rapper called Young Dolph died.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
That's okay. What happened. So he tweeted that.
Because he's also just before that, he's tweeting something about like, yeah, I mean, he's tweeting like he's got to hit up Nobu this week. Like, no, Nobu's in Miami, right?
Yes. There's also one in New York.
Oh, well, I guess. All right. I don't know. Maybe it's nothing. It's nothing. I'm just like, what is going on here?
Yeah. Although that would say a lot if we're going to be getting excited on this podcast over Todd Gurley.
About Todd Gurley. I mean, once upon a time, we'd have been getting really excited.
Yeah. About 2 years ago. So somewhere around about 2 years ago, we would have been pretty excited about Todd Gurley, which leads us, since we're talking about 2 years ago, why not 10 years ago? Joe Flacco was starting this weekend. Excited.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's right. Excited about this as a Dolphins. Yeah. As a Dolphins fan, seeing how he played against us last year. Yes, I'm very excited about it. Okay. As a Dolphin fan, seeing him previously go like 6-0 against us. Before last year,
not good, right?
I would not be so excited about it, but last year, like we kind of dreaded. I remember this. I remember we kind of dreaded it last year. We're like, oh man, by all rights, we should just absolutely trash him disgustingly, last year. But he had this record against us, And we're like, yeah, this could be something to keep an eye on. And then we won the game 24-0.
Yes. And it was never really close. I remember.
No, it wasn't. Flacco did terribly.
It was one of those games where the announcers say, oh, the Jets have not crossed midfield yet. And it's like the beginning of the third quarter.
Joe Flacco had a 50 passer rating against us that day.
He also had a sack where, at this point, I don't care. Okay, you're under pressure and a larger man is trying to bring you down. I don't give a shit. Ground the fucking thing, right? He also took, what was it, a 38-yard sack or something like that against Emmanuel Ogba. Remember?
Oh, my God. I did not remember that, but no.
Yeah, it was right before the half. It was like on 3rd and 11.
He had 3 sacks for 38 yards. I know that. And evidently one of them accounted for all the 38 yards.
Yeah, it was ridiculous against Emmanuel Ogba. But yeah, that another quirk of that game. Do you remember Ryan Fitzpatrick started that game? Do you remember what he was on third down and what the Dolphins were on third down on this day?
No, I do not. Were they like, oh wait, this was the what'd you say, 1 of 10?
0 for 10.
0 for 10. That's right. This was the game where we couldn't convert a goddamn third down until, and I recall this, and I didn't look it up, I swear. Until
Tua came in.
Tua came in at the very end of the game, and he threw 2 fucking passes, I think.
Yes.
And one of them converted a third down. and then he was named the starter the very next game.
Yes, he was.
And like, so, I remember Chan Gailey was asked about like Tua's like coming in and getting, that was his first action as a Dolphin, you know, period. And I remember Chan Gailey like coming in and he was like cracking up and like, you know, yeah, he looked pretty good on those two plays or whatever. Like he was totally deadpanning it. And then like, the very next game, like someone has to call Chan Gailey and be like, yeah, we're benching Ryan Fitzpatrick and we're putting Tua up. And he's like, wait, is this a crank call?
You know, my memory of that game was the last play of the game. Tua does like an RPO and he gives it to Gaskin, and Gaskin cuts it inside and gets tackled for like a 3 or 4 yard gain. And Gaskin gets up from the pile. The game's over. And Tua goes up to Myles Gaskin and tells him, "Now you had the outside. You could have cut it to the outside." And Myles Gaskin looks at him like, "What in the fuck are you talking about? Game's over. We're walking off the field. Why are you telling me to take it, to bounce it outside? Like, what's the use?" You know what I mean?
But I just thought it was funny that like Chan Gailey was asked by our media, and I don't blame them, but like, you know, he had to give an assessment of Tua Tagovailoa coming in and throwing two passes or whatever it was. It was amazing. It was amazing. And yet what's most amazing about it is that the assessment was completely appropriate because Tua was starting the very next game against the Rams.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Do you remember who
the Rams, who nobody gave us a chance of beating?
No. Right? Do you remember who the two completions were against? Who caught the two passes that Tua threw against the Jets?
I do not remember offhand. I would have to look it up.
It was Patrick Laird and Jakeem Grant.
Oh, Jakeem Grant. Yeah, yes. I should have figured one of them was.
He who has fumbled three more times with the Chicago Bears. So it hasn't been.
The Bears fans are just like, they have inherited all of the Miami Dolphins fan vitriol.
I feel bad for him. He's such a nice guy. Such a good kid.
He's such a hard worker. Such a nice guy. A jackrabbit in practice. I mean,
but stop fumbling, man.
It's really too bad that it doesn't come together for him in the games, because he's such a good practice player. He's, you know, he looks good at times, and it's just I probably will never trust a super tiny player like him again. Just because I think the ball is so big in their hands, it's like a freaking dodgeball or something, and like,
or a, you know, greased up beach.
Well,
ball.
I mean, think about it. Like, if try and be athletic and catch a dodgeball, like, you know, and do it without it bouncing off your hands, or you know, try and be athletic and not have a dodgeball poked out of your hands or a beach ball poked out of your hands. I mean, it's just like when the ball is so big in that little Smurf's hands, like it's just not very secure.
It's not good.
And so I'm never gonna trust a small guy like that again, I don't think. In terms of ball security and finishing catches.
Yeah, it's just not gonna happen for him.
Like, that was my learning. That was my learning moment.
Yes,
I'm probably gonna get burned for it, because there's probably gonna be some, you know, super small dude like that. Like,
well, the great thing is that we don't play the Bears for a while. So
you think you'll have a revenge game against us? I think he'd fumble it four times against us. I think
he's capable
four times. I think he's no. I don't think for some reason. I just think it's gonna be the opposite of that. Like, he's gonna fumble it and he's gonna muff like three punts, drop two balls, like including like a 60 yarder or something like that. I just have a feeling.
Yeah, Xavier Howard got named defensive player of the week, by the way, for the AFC.
As he should.
Okay. Not Javon Holland, because I argued this with Simon, and Simon's like, well, you know, the other guy made the more memorable play.
No, I agree. I agree with Xavier Howard on this one. That play was it turned on a dime or anything, because it was competitive, but it was just, you know, it was basically the play that to me won the game.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and I think that it, and it was just like this mammoth play that he made too. It wasn't, it yeah, wasn't all like, of it. It wasn't, he yeah, he did all
it.
Of
he picked it up and then he ran it in.
Yeah. And like that run back, like there was no taking there. He was not taking no for an answer with respect to the goal line and the end zone there. I mean, he's just like, how many guys in that situation you see run out of bounds?
Yeah.
Or, you know, they're trying, but they're, you know, they're not quite able to elude the defense. I mean, this dude had a will on that play, and he turned it into a truly great play, like the sort of play that you can remember for a while.
Yeah, I was shocked to learn that that was only his second touchdown as a Dolphin. Like,
that is a little shocking, right?
Right. And his first one was a pick six against the Broncos in his second season.
But it's a little shocking, especially given that sort of nose for the end zone that he displayed, like that unwillingness to go down and settle.
Yeah, because as soon as he scored, I started thinking to myself, okay, that has to be like his fourth or fifth, and he has to be challenging Jason Taylor for the Dolphin record, which I believe is seven. I think Jason Taylor has seven.
Doesn't Zach Thomas have like six or something like that?
Yeah,
like
yeah, Zach were, Thomas is like right. Yeah, he's right behind Jason Taylor, but Jason Taylor played a little longer. So Jason Taylor, I think got to seven. But then I was, I learned, oh, he only has two. So he has a long way to go to catch JT. Mm-hmm. But yeah, talking about expectations, if you look at the next four games, and I asked Simon this too, and Simon had a different answer. He had he made me think about it a little bit more. If you look at the next four games, Dolphins are favored in the next four. Against Carolina, the early line is pick 'em. But depending on what happens this weekend, who knows? Maybe the Dolphins are a point favorite or so against Carolina. They're home for a month after this week. I'm no math major, but if they win those four games, they'll be at 7-7 and in the thick of all of this. Is it time to be expecting them?
In the thick of it.
Yes. Is it time to start expecting them to do this to try to salvage the season? Like, you know, they're being presented with another opportunity. Look, you're favored. You're playing, theoretically, teams that are inferior to you for the next 4 weeks. And you're playing almost all of them at home. And then you don't get to leave home for an entire month. Like, the NFL couldn't have handed this team a better opportunity. Go 4-0. Isn't that the expectation?
You know, it's... It actually would not – well, it wouldn't surprise me totally to see them get back to 7-7 or not – what is it? Yeah, 7-7 and then and then just blow it by losing the next three. you know, that's – remember, they died at the end of last year. And they still haven't proven that they can carry momentum through to the end of the year under Brian Flores. So, I mean, I don't think you're wrong that this is the Jets. We should, even in New York, and we're facing Joe Flacco, and we should be able to just solidly win this game. And then we're playing the Carolina Panthers at home, and then we're playing the New York Giants at home, and then we're playing the New York Jets at home. You know, there's a lot of reasons to believe that we should win those games. You know, I guess the Giants did win an overtime game on the road. I didn't think they had a win on the road this year, but yeah, I mean, there's definitely reasons to believe that that we should do that. But then what? Because then we play the Saints and the Titans and the Patriots in the final game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And what good is it going to be that we managed to tie it back up to 7-7 when we finish 7-10? You know, like that's, and I just don't know that they've found their answers yet, particularly on offense. I mean, is Will Fuller ever going to play again? I mean, I suppose there's upside if he does.
And on Will Fuller, I can't get a straight answer. I've tried to dig into what's wrong with his finger, and I had somebody tell me, no, he broke it in half, his middle finger on his right hand. And then I have somebody else tell me that he should really be out for the entire season, but he's holding out hope that he can play, but that he had shattered his middle finger on his right hand. So I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
But I guess we shall see. But I you know, I always maintain, you know, okay, you're a wide receiver. Obviously, a finger catching a football is kind of important. But there's nothing wrong with taping it and then running really fast in a straight line. That could help the offense as well. You know what I mean? Bob.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, but well, we'll see. But if they say they do get there, I mean, do we have any chance of going on the road against the Saints and winning, going on the road against the Titans?
Particularly, well, when you go on the road, here's the thing. When you go on the road to play the Saints, Drew Brees is not their quarterback. Trevor Siemian is their quarterback.
Yeah, I get it.
Okay. If you're intimidated by Trevor Siemian, then, you know, then the team is worse than we thought. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I guess so.
And then what else do you have? A team that you beat at home to close the season, the Patriots, and Ryan Tannehill. Derrick Henry. He's out for the year. So you see what I'm getting at? The football gods are putting their finger on the scale. Are we going to take advantage of it?
You know, the way that the most Dolphin way that this all ends is that we miss the playoffs and then we have to look back at it and mm-hmm. realize that that overtime loss to the Raiders,
yes,
that walk-off field goal to the Jaguars, the walk-off field goal to the Jaguars and the walk-off field goal to the Falcons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those were the difference between us actually being a playoff team and not. And
I would bet on it, actually. I would bet on it. I think like an 8-9 finish starting to feel good to me. I do think that they're going to win four in a row here.
But I do think
they're going to lose two out of the last three, and that's going to be the problem.
What's the change in quarterback narrative if they do that? Like, or will it?
I don't know. I think it might even hurt them. I think it might even hurt Tua Tagovailoa because I think that they'll convince themselves defense is right there. All we need is a little tinkering. If we get an elite quarterback, voila, 12 wins. Mm. You know what I mean? Especially if they get to 9 wins, which is 9 wins is a hell of a finish. Okay. That means that they're just going to lose one more game the rest of the way, which is
That's a fair point. You know, like to think about, like if they, the more at some point, you know, at some point right now, pulling one out against the Ravens and you know, helped change his narrative for the good. But at some point they start winning too much, you know, if he's not also piling on these, you know, Herculean stats,
yeah,
then people are going to start looking at it a different way. Be like, hey, this is a good team. We just need that Deshaun Watson guy, mm-hmm. you know, to put us over the edge. And then we're back to an off season of headaches.
Yes. That's probably where we're headed. Okay. But yeah, I'm fine with piling on some expectations on this team. They failed to meet most for the entire season. So why not, you know, put another obstacle in their way? It's not much of an obstacle. I know people are saying, some people have told me, like, okay, now you're moving the goalposts and making it more difficult. No, I'm not. I'm making it easy on them. They got to win 4 games that they're favored in.
Well, you
three
know,
of them this, at home. You know what I mean?
Here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. They are what is slamming into place right now is a defensive turnaround. And that is what we have seen. We started to see it against the Buffalo Bills, right? Yes. The score ended up 26-11.
By the way, not to interrupt you, but you know that they're on exact pace on turnovers from last year, and they're number one in quarterback hits.
I've heard that as well. I heard both of those things. But so they started to turn around the defensive turnaround against the Buffalo Bills. Certainly a hell of a defensive performance against the Houston Texans, hell of a defensive performance against the Baltimore Ravens. They almost like they scored a net. They allowed like a net of 3 points, right? Against the Ravens or something like that. Or maybe
the Ravens on their touchdown drive had 68 yards in penalties.
Yeah. That's right.
Out of 92 earned. So
and some of those penalties were truly bullshit, right?
Yes.
Wasn't there
so they earned about 20 yards.
Something like that. Wasn't there a blow to the head that didn't exist or something like that?
Yes.
Like,
Javon Holland got called for a blow to the head.
That didn't
to be
exist.
Fair, at his own goal line, we should have been off the field early on in that drive, but Jerome Baker got a little bit too excited and decided to plant. I don't know if you saw that play. Decided to plant Lamar Jackson on the back of his head, which is a no-no nowadays.
Yeah.
So that one was legitimate.
It was semi-legit to me. I was still, as a fan, I was still pretty pissed off at that one. But I mean, the Javon Holland one was egregious.
Yes, it was.
I thought,
it was on third down too.
It was just fictitious, is what it was. But yeah, and it was on third down. They were going to get off the field. But anyway, so defensive turnaround. I believe a defensive turnaround from this team. I do. I think that this is Brian Flores' specialty. This is a defense that actually does have more talent now than they did before. Mm-hmm. There's obviously been some issues transitioning to this year's defensive approach. Maybe they decided to call things a little bit differently on second down versus third down than they did a year ago. And it came back to bite them in the ass. But I believe a defensive turnaround. Have we any signs, even with Tua Tagovailoa at quarterback, any signs that we're seeing an offensive turnaround?
No, not whatsoever. I mean, just don't see it.
Just not yet, because I mean, we still have a truly terrible offensive line. It's not like we're starting to establish like a physical ground attack or anything like that.
Nope.
Like it's bad, right? I mean, we are a 17 points per game type of offense.
Which is not good. Last time
that is a bad team, right? That is
yeah.
That is just...
And I get on here every single year, and they're nowhere near it. I say, what is it that I always say every single year? Average 3 touchdowns per game.
Yeah,
they're nowhere
you
near.
You got
that.
To, and nowhere... 3 touchdowns plus, and usually you, yes. you want 3 touchdowns plus.
Yeah, usually when you get 3 touchdowns, you're going to get a couple more field goals, and you're going to be in the 27s or so.
Something like that. We have not seen any sign that we have a truly turning around offense, a true turnaround happening on offense. Not against the Ravens, who we legitimately only scored 15 offensive points against the Ravens. And that, you know, the Ravens defense is not immaculate. By no, name, they allowed 41 to the Cincinnati Bengals and 31 to the Vikings
the Ravens defense can't rush the passer. They're bad against the pass, but they're really good against the run. But like I said last week, Dolphins don't run it, so it works out perfectly.
So then the question becomes, if we have not seen the signs yet of an offensive turnaround, only the defensive turnaround, can you even count on this next streak that you've kind of laid out, where we go up and beat the Jets in New York, we come back home and beat the Carolina Panthers and the New York Giants at home, and then we have a bye week and we come back and beat the Jets at home again. Can we trust even that when the offense is still an awful offense? And what, in order to win even those games against bad teams, what ends up having to happen is that the defense has to be like the second coming of the 2000
Ravens,
Baltimore Ravens, or was it 1999? I forget.
No, I think it was the 2000 Ravens. Yeah,
it was the 2000 Ravens, and or the 2000. I think it was 2003 or something like that. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense that was so incredible with Warren Sapp. They were right on pace with like that Ravens defense. Although the year the Ravens defense was that way, the Titans made still claim they were the number one defense. But anyway, like they would have, even just to beat those four bad opponents, that's the kind of defense that and to be fair, in the last two games, we fielded that sort of defense against the Texans and the Ravens. But are we really going to keep that up against the Jets, the Panthers, the Giants, and the Jets again, to where we're going to go 4-0? I mean, I think if Simon begs to differ about this next four games, you know, that's the basis of it. Can we really expect greatness from a unit for the next four games over the next.
Yeah. What Simon said that, and I found it made me think. He said he doesn't find the next four games all that interesting if they were to go 4-0. He says he would find interesting after going 4-0, being at 7-7, traveling to New Orleans and doing the job over there.
Yeah.
He said that would get him excited if they go to 8-7. Because then you start to believe, like, okay, this team, you know, they're putting it together now.
Well, everybody would, and that's exactly the time when they would pull the rug out from under us by losing like 43 to nothing against the Titans and then losing, you know, 36 to nothing against
the Patriots. Can't lose 43 to nothing to Ryan Tannehill and nothing else. You know what I mean? Well,
dude, Titans have only lost two games. I mean, yes, I know. You know, what's his name is out, but they won anyway. Derrick Henry is out, but they won anyway.
They're winning behind good defense and the arm of Ryan Tannehill.
The arm of Ryan.
Yes, well, that's actually a thing that's happening.
It is a thing, to be fair.
You know, we also talked about the surging Patriots, but the Patriots are going to hit a wall here because they're playing Atlanta. But you know who they play after they play Atlanta?
No.
Buffalo, Tennessee, Colts, Buffalo. That's a murderer's row.
Yeah, I mean, it's just which Patriots are we seeing right now? Like, you know, it's a murderer's row last year with last year's Patriots, right?
Mm-hmm.
But which Patriots are we really seeing right now? Like, there's a lot to be said about whether they've got things the way they want, and and if that's the case, then they're basically unbeatable in November and December. I mean, that's the Patriots that we're used to seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Patriots have.
If they're going to, that's basically unbeatable in November and December.
Yeah, if they're gonna prove themselves, quote unquote, prove themselves this four game stretch, where they play the best team in the AFC, the Titans, they play the Bills twice inside of a month, and the Colts, who no matter what, they seem to show up
because they do have to play the Falcons first.
Yeah, but the Falcons, that's like a warm-up. Don't lose to the Falcons. You lose to the Falcons, you know, season's over.
It's I don't know, it's not a warm-up, and I would warn people against that for this reason alone. It is a Thursday night game on the road. It is a short turnaround week.
Yeah,
I mean, they just played Sunday, they played against the Cleveland Browns, and now they're already playing tomorrow on the road. That's never an easy feat. And no. I don't care who the opponent is.
Well, it's prediction time. Care to know what Simon predicted? I don't know if this is good or not, but he predicted Miami Dolphins 35, New York Jets 16.
See, I can't get behind that because when have we seen the signs of this offensive turnaround, though?
I couldn't either. So I went with 31-16, but I did give the Dolphins a little bit of credit because the Jets have given up 45 points three out of the last 4 weeks. So can Tua, maybe they get a defensive score and it helps. You know, Tua puts up 24, the defense gets the other seven to get him to 31. You know, that's not bad.
I don't support this. I just don't because the offensive line is not any better.
Do you expect them to just smash the Jets? Because
no, what I would not be surprised by, and probably would be my more to taste on my prediction, is like either a 16-3 victory or a 16-10 victory that comes about because of some fluky touchdown.
Yeah, inspire confidence.
No, it wouldn't. But I mean, like, seriously, what do we have to have confidence in on the offense? Anywhere you look other than the quarterback position, and even that, you know, we're kind of still like, you know, we're kind of, I'm being honest here, you know, we all believe in Tua Tagovailoa, but we recognize he has not proven himself. But nowhere on that offense can you be confident except for Mike Gesicki
and Waddle. I like Jalen Waddle.
Yeah, but he's not gotten tracked. he's still catching what, like 8 yards a catch or something like that. I mean, it's,
yeah, he's
it's
doing the Jarvis Landry thing.
Yeah. And we have not seen, I got this brought up to me, and it's a fair point. Like, why haven't we seen him shake loose? Like, yeah, I get it. He's being used like Jarvis Landry and stuff like that. But this is a guy that was dynamic after the catch. Why haven't we seen that yet? We know he's fast. We know he gets open easily because he's fast. He's agile. He's actually pretty savvy for a receiver in terms of how he gets open. But why haven't we seen him really shake loose? There's a certain amount of want to that seems to be missing from his game after the catch, in my perception this year as a rookie. Like, there's a certain willingness. Let's just put it this way. Xavien Howard on that interception return showed an unwillingness to take, you know, to settle that I don't think I've seen from Jalen Waddle on a single catch.
Well, in that same game, I was going to bring this up because it seemed like an odd play to me. Tua throws that out on 3rd and 7. Waddle catches it at 6, runs over Marlon Humphrey for 3 more yards and gets the first down. Remember?
Okay. I do recall that one now. Yeah.
Okay. Like, that play made me like, oh, okay. You know, I hadn't seen that before.
Still, it's still not on the same level of what Xavien Howard showed. No. That was like straight up Troy Polamalu. Like, but yeah, I mean, that attitude after the catch to me has been missing all year from Jalen Waddle. So to some extent, we're all just sitting here like going after the coaches, like, oh my God, how are you using Jalen Waddle? He's so fast. He's so dynamic. How is he the next Jarvis Landry? But some of that's on Waddle too, because I just have sensed a willingness to go down and live for the next play. And when you do that, then that's what you and you're used as sort of a slot short screen guy and short passes and stuff. And well, yeah, that's how you end up with 8 yards per catch, and you never get untracked for a big one. And so he needs to start not accepting no for an answer, like with respect when the defense is like is closing in on him.
All right. So do you have a number? Do you have a prediction? Because
yeah, like I said,
31-16.
We're talking 16-3 in my you know, unless they get a fluky touchdown, then I can even see 16-10. And you know, there's a lot of ick there. But
Jets did beat the Titans and they beat the Bengals. So
I think more than likely they get that fluky touchdown. Why don't we call it 16-10?
All right. That's it. There is no more. The next time we talk to you, mission 7-7 will be one quarter of the way there. We'll talk about 3 games at home inside of a month after Monday. We will have results. Hopefully a win. Please get us a win. But till then.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.